Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Give that man a job. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon, 51551, ray at rte.ie. There's snow some places. They said it was coming in from the east and now it's coming up from the southwest. So people are confused. It's the most talked about snow in the history of snow talking. So we'll be talking more about it today. Seemingly it's arriving and there's rumours that there's going to be snow on those hills. Actually, there's snow in the Dublin mountains already. Anyway, 51551, ray at rte.ie. How are you? I still can't figure out why we can't give the AstraZeneca vaccination to everybody. They're doing it everywhere else. Well, most places. They're doing it in England. The WHO have now said that everybody over 18 should get it where possible. And look, you say these things and then, you know, You can U-turn. You can go, oh, yeah, right, we probably made a mistake there. Maybe we should give out the AstraZeneca vaccination. I just don't understand. There's a great thing doing the rounds, actually. The NHS in the UK have employed the vast talents of Elton John and Michael Caine to encourage people to get vaccinated and to show them that it's a thing of nothing, as they say down the country, that it's not painful and no effects. Now, I'm not going to play the full 1 minute and 30 seconds, but the whole idea is that Elton is auditioning to be the main person in the vaccination ad or public information video. And anyway, and then Michael comes along. So here's a little bit of a 48 seconds. So it's Elton John you'll hear first and then Michael Caine.
Elton John, audition, take one.
My name is Elton John.
Cut there. Little less showbiz, Elton.
My name is Elton John.
Bit more showbiz.
My name is Elton John.
Let's go for your Michael Caine impression. Just let's see what it's like.
My name is Elton John.
What was that, Elton?
That was me acting.
Okay, let's cut there.
And as you can see, I'm still standing. Yeah.
Come on, Elton.
Wow, okay. Thanks, Elton. We'll let you know.
Oh, well, at this short notice, you won't find anyone bigger.
Hello. My name is Michael Caine. I've just had a vaccine for COVID. It didn't hurt. Not many people know that.
There you go. And that's a public information video that's doing the rounds, put together by the NHS using Elton John and Michael Caine. That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. The other video that's doing the round, well, there's hundreds of them now. We spoke to Mary Gardner last week and she was one of the Gardaí involved in the Gardaí Jerusalem Challenge. Well, the list of people who are doing it now is goes on and on and on and on and on. And we have a little bit of a roll of honour. Cue music there, yeah. So Lidl have got people from all over the country to do it. Aldi have done it. Super Value have done it. Pharmacies up and down the country have done the dance. Staff and residents at Community Hospital of the Assumption in Thurles, Leitrim Sports Partnership have done it. Derry Credit Union filmed theirs in front of the Derry Girls mural. On Post Workers in Clonmel did it. Trinity Catering Department did it. Gardaí and Mallow Editing did it. The Imperial Hotel in Cork, M&S staff, Grafton Street in Dublin, and more and many, many more. So well done to everybody who's getting involved in that and spreading the joy and spreading smiles and dancing. It just makes, if you can do it at all, it makes you feel so good. I was practicing the other night and I didn't realize, I thought I was on my own in the kitchen. I thought nobody was watching. And then Jenny said, later on, like when we were sitting on the couch watching the telly, the dancing's coming on. It's just trying to convince Tom and Kate. Jenny definitely said no, she's not up for it. But I'm trying to convince the two others and we'll get it together and have a video at some stage in the future. It'll be forgotten about by the time ours is finished, but we're working on it. Anne was on to us back at the beginning of February, which is only last week, when we said we had some St. Bridget's crosses and she wanted some for herself because she couldn't get them because of lockdown and pandemic and all of that. Anyway, we sent them out to her with some love stamps from her on post and she just sent us a lovely email to say thanks. So thank you for saying thanks, Anne. And Hillary's been on to ray@rte.ie. Just to let us know of her lockdown routine, I suppose. And I think routine is so, so important when it comes to lockdown. Like getting up out of bed every morning at the same time. Because they say there's nothing worse to affect your sleep than getting up later and later. And it's a vicious circle. Anyway, Hillary says, first lockdown, a bit of a novelty as weather good, contact with neighbours and garden. Finished upholstering an armchair, started about 10 years ago. Second lockdown, different. Evening's getting dark, so I found it necessary to plan to save my sanity, which was a great help when third lockdown occurred. Apart from routine cooking, cleaning, gardening and walks. So here it is. On Tuesdays, I do upholstery. I have four antique dining room chairs to be stripped and reupholstered, one completed, one half done, two waiting. On Wednesday, I paint. Not pictures, but I paint on fabric and glass. Very satisfying, sometimes painting on silk. Lovely and relaxing. On Thursday, play bridge. On Friday, my culture night. This can be music or lectures or TV. On Saturday, a friend and I have a four-course meal with all the trimmings, with candles, wine, best china and dress-up. This really helps. Sometimes we order a takeaway or I make Thai green curry. Dessert is always luscious, like strawberry roulade or pavlova. Yum, yum, yum. On Sunday, religion on TV. Rest of the day is spent walking and zooming grandchildren and extended family phone calls. On Monday, a small group of friends and myself did a project called Down Memory Lane, where folk wrote about local or social history. This is now finished and I attach a copy of our work. It is quite nice, but the colour photos have not come out in colour, but are unfortunately grainy black. Now that this project is finished, I have started on my family history. Cheers, Hilary McRae. There you go. That's the way to do it, isn't it? You have to organise a routine. Probably you don't have to be as busy as Hilary, but well done, Hilary. Melda has been on to ray@rte.ie. I'd appreciate if you could play a request for my cousin Joan Bulger's 90th birthday tomorrow, the 11th of February. Is that today? What day is it today? It's tomorrow. Today is the 11th. Yes, yes, sorry. She lives in Lismore in County Waterford. She's an amazing lady who has been widowed for the past 38 years. I mentioned a song there now. I didn't notice that until I'm reading it now, Melda. But happy birthday, Joan. Have a brilliant day on your 90th birthday. And when we were doing the calendar of the year, the charity calendar of the year, we spoke to Katrina Lowry from Hilltop Sanctuary. And they do great work there for abused and mistreated animals down in Scariff in County Clare. Katrina's partner, John, has been on to us to tell us that she has a very novel St. Valentine's Day promotion and a way of raising funds for Hilltop Sanctuary. And it is Hay Not Roses Appeal. A very small donation of €10 will contribute one bale of hay to feed one horse for 2 days. So if you have a loved one who likes animals and you feel that it might be a nice gesture for you to help animals on their behalf, hashtag Hay Not Roses Appeal. And you'll be helping out the Hilltop Sanctuary in Scariff and County Clare. So delighted to mention that because it's a brilliant idea. What else is going on? These are things that were mentioned in the meeting this morning. Archaeologists found a shell back in 1931 in the Marsoula Cave in southwestern France. A huge, large sea snail shell. At the bottom of the shell was a 3.5 centimetre opening. Anyway, they've gone back to it. They've gone back to this shell and they thought, oh, maybe that was a musical instrument. Maybe that's the type of thing that they used 18,000 years ago to play music. And lo and behold, a musicologist says, yes, it's a conch. And that's how they entertain themselves. And this is what... So if you were in a cave 18,000 years ago and you went to a concert or a recital, you'd probably hear something like this. Bravo, bravo, encore, encore, encore. Fans of Schitt's Creek will be interested to hear that the family mansion, it's only featured in flashbacks and at the beginning of the programme because they were very rich and then they were very not so rich, I suppose. Anyway, it's the mansion is going on sale for $15 million. $15 million. And if you're in the market for something of that nature, you have to go to the residential property supplement of the Irish Times. Hollywood Hills Glamour in Killiney for €10 million. This is a bit of escapism. It's like cribs. I would never do this normally, but I actually went on to the website that's selling it and I did the video tour. So it's this very modern looking house that doesn't look very Irish. Very modern. Very modern. I'm just reading it here. So, if you went in, so guests move straight from the lobby to a double living area where pre-drinks are served beside a glass climate-controlled wine room with a wall of suspended wine bottles. Behind it, there is a walk-in fridge and service pantry for easy access to drinks and hors d'oeuvres. The living room beyond is arranged around a windowed fireplace and granite hearth set into a carved concrete wall. It has a separate yoga room. This thing, it's separate yoga room. It has what looks like an oval office nearly. It has 7 bedrooms, 5 bathrooms, separate garage, and it has a sea view from the master bedroom. And if you have 10 million handy, it's there for you. It's there for you. The current owners are moving on because all their children have grown up and it's probably a little bit too big for them. So anyway, great description there, great article. Madeline Lyons has it in the property section of the Irish Times. And if you want a bit of escapism, a bit like MTV Cribs, there's a video online that you can watch as well. Now, let's see what you're saying. 51551 or rayatrt.ie. There's snow in Galway City. Usually the children listen with jealousy as snow falls in Dublin and nothing here for making snow. Men, women, families. Yeah, we'll have to say snow what? They can't say snow men anymore. What are we going to say? Snow things. Snow people. Anyway, Mary says she's off to throw some snowballs now. There are other places in the country besides Dublin. Moycullen in County Galway is covered with snow since this morning and still snowing. The snow we have falling here now is strange and not the usual stuff. It's called graupel. True, I looked it up. Larry, we mentioned graupel the other day. We're ahead of you. G-R-A-U-P-E-L. It's halfway between a hailstone and a snowflake. And we have the man who actually has been using that word, he claims, for 8 years now, coming up on the programme. Don't forget to mention Wicklow and District Lions Club. They've done the Jerusalem Challenge as well. That's from Sean O'Lehan. And thank Jerusalem for the brightest moments of the past year. How can you not smile and cry at the same time? I'll never tire of watching the different videos from all walks of life, from my pharmacist at O'Donnell's, my dialysis crew in Castlebar, and so many more throughout Mayo, Ireland and the world. This song and dance is so up, you forget about being down. Ah, isn't that lovely? That's Kevin. I love it as well. It's in my head. It's just so... And I looked at an interview with the guy, I can't remember his name now, South African DJ, producer, and he said when he got the groove, that's what they call it, a groove, he knew there was something spiritual about it and he had to get the right vocal. Jerusalem. And then he got that lady to do the vocal. It's just amazing. Anyway, can you please play a request for my good friend Jackie Fleming? It's her birthday today. She's great support to me over the years after several traumas. She's always there to help, one in a million. So hello to you, Jackie Fleming. And you must remember that the person playing the conch shell did not practice. Aha! So it was just... They just... Yeah. Well, maybe they should have. Maybe they should have practiced. Good afternoon. Cindy and Cher, I got you, babe. I was sitting around, messing around over the weekend, and I started off with Jerusalem and I made a playlist and I've called it Feel Good, which I must share with you. It's just sort of songs like I Got You Babe and Jerusalem, and there's all sorts of various things from every decade, and it's just supposed to make you feel good. So I'll share that with you tomorrow up on, we have a Ray Darcy Show Spotify playlist thingamajig. Now, the other things that I forgot to mention there, you saw that yesterday, the Weetabix and Beans thing. Just, again, I've done a lot of things for the show over the years and in the name of good broadcasting, but I'm not going to eat baked beans and Weetabix. One thing that was mentioned this morning on the Zoom call was that if you put sugar on cucumber, it tastes like watermelon. Did you know that? I didn't know that at all. I didn't know that. Ray, I like the music from The Shell, but it was unconscionable that you were clapping when they would have been too busy skinning the mice. Is that what they ate back in the day, 18,000 years ago? Sorry to correct you, but the conch shell is pronounced conch. I know this from visiting the Bahamas on many occasions where the locals sell them on street corners shouting, "Gimme dollar for conch." Thanks, Anne. Thanks, Anne. Miriam Donoghue here from Gold. The Irish Aid Agency, our teams in Malawi, Zimbabwe and Honduras have also got into the Jerusalem dance groove and have done their own videos. It was a great way for some fun and positivity during what's a challenging time for aid workers supporting vulnerable communities in during the COVID-19 pandemic. The dances can be seen on Gold's YouTube channel. Check it out. I watched the original one, which was done by a group of people. This was supposed to be the original one. It was done by a group of people in Angola. And they were so casual about the whole thing, although it was perfectly choreographed and synchronised, that they were eating while doing it. So they actually had a plate of food in one hand and a fork in the other, and they did the routine as well. It's amazing. If you look it up, Angola, original Jerusalemma, you'll see it. It'll bring a smile to your face. And it's been going around the world since the middle of last year. So there are hundreds of videos from all over the world. And there's one guy who does the top 10 from around the world. That's his opinion. It wouldn't be my top 10, I think. And Garda Síochána should be up there number one at this point in time. Yeah. Greg O'Shea, you know Greg O'Shea. He was tweeting last night, "Can't stop thinking lately about why we are told in school to learn stuff off by heart, like poems and theorems, but not taught everyday useful life lessons like how to handle your taxes and mental health. I just feel students' time could be used so much more effectively." And I suppose parents all over the country now are seeing firsthand, you know, what their children are learning. And maybe question marks are being asked all over the place about the curriculum. And that's another good thing that might come out of this pandemic. We'll sort of look at our educational system again. We look at the leave insert, how that's put in place. We look at the curriculum. And definitely there is a huge argument to be made for learning about your taxes and learning resilience. And this is the thing I've been saying for years. I remember watching that documentary, one of the Steins. What was his name? The Stein guy. He went to Australia to play AFL. He used to play football for Dublin. Jim Stein. And was that his name? Yeah. And he set up this thing in Australia, which went around to schools and went about building up resilience in young people so that they would have coping mechanisms when the tough stuff comes along, as it inevitably does in life. Coping mechanisms. Anyway, the positive news is that I'm reading Sharing the Vision at the moment, which is the document which lays out the strategy for the mental health services in Ireland for the next 10 years or so. And in that, they're at pains to point out that there needs to be cross-departmental cooperation and there needs to be preventative measures put in place, as in we need to start thinking about mental health from an early age. So it needs to be part of the curriculum in schools. Now, it probably is in some schools already, but they're going to put it in place as a mandatory thing. So that's positive. But that being said, Vision for Change, which was there from 2006 to 2016, a lot of the stuff that was in that still hasn't been implemented. So anyway, Sharing the Vision. I'd love to talk to the person responsible for mental health in this country. I think it's Mary Butler, is it? She's the minister responsible. I'd love to have a chat with her and see what her plans are, because everyone's saying it and it's sort of inevitable that there's going to be a fallout when it comes to the country's mental health after, you know, the pandemic's over. It's because it's having a negative effect on a lot of people. So it'd be great to talk to her and see what the plans are at a governmental level. Now, this. Yes, our quiz of today. Today is the 11th of February and we have 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. Big news stories, scientific breakthroughs, TV programmes, songs, movies, births and deaths. All in there. We're looking for two people to answer 5 questions each. There is a prize. Today's prize comes from the award-winning Holistic Showed Spa in Dunboyne Castle Hotel. You and a friend will enjoy an exclusive one-day spa retreat where you will select from their luxury spa treatments, including Voya and Image Skincare facials, deep tissue massage and reflexology. You can take some time out and relax in the large hydrotherapy pool, no less, and afterwards enjoy afternoon tea in the luxurious surroundings of the 18th century Georgian formal sitting rooms. You can find out more at dunboynecastlehotel.com. And to get involved, you have to answer a qualifying question today. In which Irish county would you find the town of Bray? That's the question. In which Irish county would you find the town of Bray? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900, and we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 5, 5, 1. Put salt on a banana and it tastes much creamier. says an anonymous texter. Banana is not a fruit, but a herb, and grows on plants which are clones and not trees, which means they're weakening as a species with each generation. Didn't know all this. Don't know why the banana tastes creamier with salt on it, but maybe it's the potassium in the banana bonding with the potassium in the salt that does it. Is there potassium in salt? Is there potassium? I thought there was sodium. Sodium in salt. Anyway, any scientists want to help us explaining that, ask that person. And Ray, civics, why don't we teach about how the state functions in schools? That's another important thing we should learn about so we can properly engage with the state and the government and all that sort of thing when we get older. Very important. Now, a man who took a week off because of the snow is Alan O'Reilly from Carlow Weather, and he's on the line now. How are you doing, Alan?
Very good, thanks, Rob.
It's not that you couldn't get to work, it's just that you're so excited about the prospect of snow, isn't that it?
Something like that, or too busy responding to everybody on Twitter and Instagram, more like.
So I think, like, we had Cathal on, the CEO of Irish Weather, last Friday, and he was predicting snow for the weekend, and we've got little flurries, and there has been falls all over the place, but we haven't got anything like was predicted. Is it coming?
Well, there has been snow, as your listeners were saying there in Galway and many places, but it's been a bit overhyped. So it was never going to be the beast from the east. And I think using that term maybe made people think back to 2018, but it was never going to be as cold as that or as snowy as that. There is more snow coming tonight. It mainly affect the southeast. It'll kind of die out as it moves up. So the Wicklow Mountains will probably take most of the snow, and all the Dublin people that are hoping for some snow. There might be a small bit that will still reach Dublin tomorrow morning. But funnily enough, it's kind of like a delayed kind of snow, I suppose. The highest risk of snow now in Dublin is probably Friday night, Saturday morning, early Saturday morning. There's heavy rain pushing in from the west, and Mahearn have actually issued new weather warnings. So there's rainfall warning for Cork, Kerry and Waterford. So unfortunately, heavy rain there. But Leinster, Cavan, Monaghan, Donegal now have a fresh snow alert, a yellow warning for snow on Saturday morning. So if you're looking for snow, it may well fall in the east of the country on Saturday morning, but it will turn to rain quite quickly. So you'll have to make that snowman fairly
quickly.
Okay,
so it won't be sticky snow for long. Can you explain this to me? Because we spoke to Cathal, as I said, I heard you on Morning Ireland, and everyone was saying that it was coming down from Siberia. If it was coming down from Siberia and it was coming from the east, why then has Galway got snow and we haven't over on the east coast?
Yeah, that's a bit of an unusual one. Yeah. Mace Head was reporting 0 degrees and moderate snow at 12 o'clock. So wasn't from Siberia, it was more Scandinavia, and that's why it wasn't quite as cold. So, but you have this very cold air coming from the east, and then Ireland's in the battleground where you have this low system in the Atlantic. So one bumps up across the other, and where they meet, then you have basically snow. So the perfect meeting spot in terms of the intensity and the cold at the moment is Galway. Uh-huh. But as the front comes up, it's kind of breaking up and dying out. Now, it will re-intensify a little bit in the southeast later, but that's basically why Galway is in the perfect line of spot. So it's an easterly with snow on the west coast, because I even saw a webcam in La Hinch had snow falling on the beach.
It's confusing. Now, they did get like real weather in Scotland last night.
They certainly did. The coldest night in the UK since 1955 for February. Minus 23 degrees in Aberdeenshire. Minus 23.
Wow.
So they really get the realest cold weather. Obviously, it's coming from the east, and anyone that looks at a map or knows a little bit of geography will know Scotland is further northeast than Ireland. So they really bore the brunt of this easterly, and certainly some record temperatures there in Scotland overnight.
So you're the man who introduced us to the word grauple this week. You say grauple, I say grauple. Let's call the whole thing off. G-R-A-U-P-L-E. And you're a pain to point out that you've been using the word since, not that you invented it, but you've been using it since, what, 2013, is it?
Well, I went back searching Twitter. I first tweeted a picture and reported it was falling in Tullow in 2013. I've been using it for many years, and it's more my Carlow accent, I think, is the growl. And my poor German in school. But yeah, I mean, it's funny because I've been saying it for years, and some people who say to me, look at me and think, did you make up that? And I'm like, no, it is a weather term. But at least, if nothing else this week, Ray, everyone has learned a new weather type.
It's terrible groppling out there. So just explain to me, you have a job, a real job, is it not to do with the weather?
Yeah, no, I work for Black Knight as an IT person. So that's and I started, I got a weather station and I set up carloweather.com and it started updating the website. And then I started social media and sure, everybody in Ireland loves weather and they can message me and abuse me when the weather's wrong. And so it's just a bit of fun. It's a hobby, but it's kind of taken off. And it's during these busy times, it's the amount of notifications and everybody's looking to know, is it going to snow in their back garden?
So you have your own weather station?
I do, yeah, in Tullow. And it recorded -17.7 in 2010. And that's kind of what made people sit up. It's in what we call a frost hollow. So it's in a bit of low-lying land, which is just east of Tullow. I don't know if you know Mount Woolsey in Tullow.
Well, I know Tullow. I know that. I played rugby there years ago. There used to be a guy who could kick balls from inside his own half over the bar. He was some guy to kick a penalty. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so it's about a mile and a half from Tullow, so it's on near the Wicklow border actually. But yeah, it's a weather station and it updates my website. So that mainly kind of got people interested in 2010 when we had some proper cold and some proper snow. Yeah. It's just taken off from there really. And on social media then these days, you know, it's so easy to post pictures and it's great engagement. Like I'm posting, retweeting people taking pictures of the snowmen. So I have people messaging me saying their children are crying, they don't have enough snow for a snowman. And then I have people sending me pictures of children absolutely overjoyed with making big snowmen.
There's a trend this time around mini snowmen. So tiny little things that, you know, because there's only sufficient snow to make these ones that are about, 3 inches tall.
Could we call them Graupelmen?
Before I let you go, have you ever met Evelyn Cusack?
No.
No?
No.
Right.
No.
I'm just interested. Would she be a hero of yours now?
Joanna Donnelly more so.
Joanna Donnelly is your favourite, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Because they'd be the rock stars in your world, wouldn't they? Those Joanna Donnelly and Evelyn Cusack.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Ger Fleming, yeah. the winking weatherman from Wexford.
Stars. I'm just a wannabe.
You're great talking to you, and thanks for the word Graupel, which I'll be using a lot over the weekend if we get any Graupel or even snow. Alan O'Reilly from Carlow Weather. Talk to you again soon, Alan. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ray. Cheers.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 RaidRTE.ie. Now, getting older. Oh, I have your attention now. Something many of us don't like to think about, but if you're lucky, it is inevitable. It comes to us all. There's a lot of difficult questions and conversations to be had around the whole issue of growing old, and a leading geriatrician from the UK, Dr. Lucy Pollock, has written, I'd say, a brilliant book called The Book About Getting Older for People Who Don't Want to Talk About It. And Lucy is on the line now. How are you doing, Lucy?
I'm well, thank you, Ray.
Yeah, congratulations on the book. So you've worked...
I'm just so glad you like it, Ray. That's very good news. Yes. Thank you.
How would you describe it? Is it a self-help book? Is it a manual? Or how would you describe it?
It's a book of stories, and they're all stories that are based on real life people who are my patients and their families. And I hope what it does is explain some of the things that happen as we get older in a really positive way. So they're stories that explain the kind of situations people can face and acknowledge that lots of older people are leading very happy and fulfilled lives. But there are some problem areas. And what I've learned over about 20 years of being a geriatrician is that if we talk about these things, they get much, much better.
Okay. There is another underlying theme in the book, and that is that old age isn't what it used to be.
No, and we've been caught on the hop a bit by that because Ireland is similar to the UK. Life expectancy has grown enormously. I look back 20 years ago when I was having children, the average woman at 65 could expect another 16 years. Now she can expect another 20 years. And so that's 4 added years of life just while I feel as though I've been hanging out the wash. It's in an incredibly short space of time. And it's kind of caught us unawares. And we haven't worked out what to do with that increased life expectancy, how to make the most of it, how to build a society that makes the most of old age so we can really enjoy ourselves to the very end. And also, as individuals, what should we be doing to make sure that we go into old age in a great shape as possible, and also make some plans for what to do. There's an awful lot of books about staying young, and that can be your plan A, but to be honest, it doesn't work. You've got to, at some point, if you're lucky, you're going to get old, and it's a good idea to have a think about it.
And now, as well as a measure of life expectancy, which is somewhere in the 80s, there's also another measure now. What is it called? Healthy life expectancy? Is
healthy that what they call it? Life expectancy, yeah. Right. And that's a really interesting one, because we're adding years to life at the moment. And but the problem is that we may not be adding healthy years to life. Okay. And that's really what everybody wants. So, you know, people want to go on living really well. People are keen to be independent, live in their own homes, be able to control their own lives. And there is a little hint in the data that suggests that that may not be happening. We may be adding years that aren't of the greatest quality. So that's a really big challenge.
Yeah, because I suppose everyone thought that's the best thing to do, keep people alive for as long as possible. That seemed, nobody was going to stand up and say, that's not a good idea. Yeah.
And to be honest, that's one of the big questions in the book is, how do you talk about the fact that, you know, lots of people are very happy being alive, they're having a great time, and they would like lots of treatment and so on. And we talk about what kind of treatments people can have. You know, is it a good idea to have a pacemaker when you're 92, like my patient Ellen, who's had a couple of falls? And the answer is yes, she's fantastic. She's still gardening. She grows her vegetables for her soup. And having a pacemaker is going to stop her having blackouts. So the message there is, do seek help. There are things that can be done. But then there's also a point where we need to have a conversation about quality as well as quantity of life. And we're beginning to realise that modern medicine offers so much, and then sometimes it's not what you want. So how do you have that conversation about saying, steady on, can we just have a think about whether I should be taking all these tablets? Do I want this operation? Should I be having chemotherapy with all the problems that that can bring? Or actually, would I rather have a slightly shorter life but more quality? And these are big conversations.
Oh, they're huge conversations, and ethical conversations as well. And everybody seems to be shying away from them, and that's why your book is such a brilliant book, because if nothing else, it's going to start conversations.
I hope so. And I hope that what I've done, Ray, is write a book that people can read. It's not a frightening book. I hope it's a comforting book, and it's kind, and I hear that, you know, there are bits that would make you laugh, and it is honest. And what I've been wanted to do for the last 20 years really is write a book that helps people find the words for these conversations. Okay. Because what I see over and over again is that if you talk about these things, A, there's loads of practical things you can do, there's help you can get, but also for a family, you just watch the weight lift off their shoulders. And you don't have to dwell on it. You don't have to talk about it every day. That would be a really gloomy subject. But what happens if you have a conversation about your future plans once, you can put it to bed, and then you can go on, you know, have your fish and chips and enjoy life again.
So you deal with, you mentioned falling already. And it's a thing that people associate with old age. And we talk about frailty, and we talk about a knock to somebody's confidence as well as to their health.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the reasons that, well, falls are very common, but they're not normal. And that's one of the things I wanted to explain in the book. A lot of people are not sure about what is normal in old age. What should you just expect? You know, when you get out of bed in the morning, is it normal for everything to creak a little bit? You know, what kind of memory loss? You know, I get to the top of the stairs and I think, what am I doing here? What did I come up here for? And I know I'm not going to remember until I go back downstairs again. Is that normal? Or is that something that is common but not actually normal? So there's things like falling over, there's things like that are embarrassing to talk about, like continence, that people don't want to talk about, but actually it's a really good idea too, because quite a lot of things that happen to people as they get older are very common, but they're not normal, and it's a good idea to seek some help.
Right. And you cite a lot of studies in the book, which is brilliant. You've done the reading, so we don't have to. For example, in falling, where they actually paid more than just your average attention to a patient, the outcomes were brilliant.
Yes, exactly that. And it's not, you know, it's not amazing science. I mean, these are very impressive studies, because to get them published and get them done is amazing. And the researchers that have done it are fantastic. But actually, this is often about really simple things. The first thing is listening really carefully to somebody who has had a fall to find out why it happened. because we know that if we do some interventions, we can reduce the risk of falling by a third. And that's a lot. That really makes a difference to people's quality of life. So, yeah, the book has some science in it, but I hope it explains it in a way that makes what I've tried to do is describe good care. And say, this is what you should hope for. This is what you should expect. This is what makes a difference. This is what to go looking for.
Mm. And dementia, of course, is a huge part of growing old. I'm just looking at statistics from Ireland. The number of people with dementia is going to double in the next 20 years. And that's a result of us staying alive longer.
It's a really big one, isn't it? Because it's what most, people really fear that because of the loss of independence. So again, it's about keeping a balance, about remembering that people with dementia can be, again, living very happy and fulfilled lives. They can be part of loving families. They can be entertaining. They can be entertained. And dementia is a really big spectrum as well. Lots of people with early stages are living very active lives. And there's questions about driving. Should you still be allowed to drive? Things like that. And then there is also facing up to the fact that dementia can be very difficult. So I talk about Brian and Margaret in the book and her journey towards a diagnosis, because to be honest, he's so sweet and kind and they've been married for years and years, and she starts getting forgetful, but he takes over things just quietly. He does the shopping list and he does the shopping, and in the end he's pretty well doing everything around the house that she used to do, and they kind of know there's a problem, but they don't want to say it. So this question is, is it a good idea to say it? Why have we got shame about dementia? That's a shocking thing. We should not have any shame about this illness. People with the illness affected by it, making it feel something shameful is so wrong. So having a good conversation about it is a very good thing. And then I talk about what do you do when things get tricky. And, my patient Clem, who just is having such a terrible time, and his poor wife, they're in a really difficult situation. And we talk about what can be done to make that better.
Is that Nancy and Clem, is it?
Yes.
Because, and I know these aren't real people, but what you've done is taken all your experience and sort of created these people to tell stories that you've lived through. And Nancy says, when you meet her at one stage, she puts her head in her hands and she says, "I long for him to die."
And it's such a sad moment.
Yeah.
And she so desperately needs to be. She's never said that to anybody. She loves him with a passion. They have been married for more than 60 years. She knows him backwards. And yet the man he has become is not the man he was. And it's so sad for her. And she knows he's suffering as well, because dementia can make the person with dementia suffer as well. So there is, people want to be positive about dementia, which is great, but we also have to accept that in some circumstances, somebody's life can be really very difficult. And for her to be able to say that and me be able to listen and say, "Do you know, Nancy, that's fine. Okay. It's all right." That's very important.
So it makes complete sense that you, as a geriatrician, have thought about how you want to be treated in old age. And as a woman in your...
I'm 55, Ray. I look around and think, how did I get to be 55? This is ridiculous.
But you've already put together an advanced directive, is it? What do they call them?
This is where we get confused as well. And we get muddled up about what's the law, what are the ethics, and so on. And so I explain the UK situation quite carefully, but there are very similar arrangements in Ireland. What I have made is a thing called an advanced decision to refuse treatment, which is about certain treatments, which is about if something awful happened, if I was in a car accident or, fell off a ladder and had a terrible head injury that I was never going to recover from, I've made some decisions about what kind of treatment I would and wouldn't want to have. And I've done that because I do not want my family to have to make those decisions on my behalf. I don't want them to have the uncertainty. But that's not right for everybody. And, there are lots of people who would not want to make that kind of plan. But there is also a similar, more informal arrangement that people can do as they get older, called an advance care plan. And that is a really useful thing to do. To be honest, just talking about it with your family, that's the most important thing. Putting it in paper is fantastic. But if you can just talk about it, have a think about what your wishes are, what your hopes are, what your fears are, have a chat to your family about that. Then if you're in trouble, they can speak for you.
I see, for example, we've chatted about this before on the show, the Irish Hospice Foundation have a thing that you can print off, think ahead, speak for yourself. And it's all about that.
That's fantastic. And, you know, the problem, the provision of that is quite patchy. And where you record it and making sure that the right people can see it when the time comes, you know, making sure that the hospital knows about it, that your GP, that your ambulance service and so on, that's a bit of a challenge. But we're getting there. And the more people talk about it, the more it becomes completely normal. And then it kind of loses some of its fear as well.
Yeah.
So, and as I say, they're not things you have to think about every day. It would be awful to wake up and think, oh, I've got to talk about that again. Mm. That would be bad. But if you just do it once, it makes a difference.
And you say in the book that this is different from a do not resuscitate instruction.
Yes.
This is different.
Exactly. And it can be part of it, but separate.
Separate,
yeah.
Okay. Assisted dying, you outline your opinion on that. And you say the discussions around assisted dying, which you've had in the UK and we've had here in Ireland, has distracted us from discussions around unassisted dying. And that's basically a lot about what we're talking about today is unassisted dying. So we need to have bigger conversations about that.
Exactly, because most people reach the end of their life and what most people want is a peaceful death, obviously, in the place that they feel safe and they don't want to be in pain and so on. Now, the problem that can arise for some people is that we don't quite know how much medical treatment to give somebody. So medical decisions are often less clear-cut than somebody would think. So I talk about a very, very frail man in the book and his lovely family. He's got a son and a daughter, and we're doing things to him. He's in hospital for months and months on and off. You know, he goes home, comes back in again. He's been in a care home. He comes back in again. He's got loads of medical problems. He can't speak for himself. We're doing blood tests on him every day. We're trying to persuade him to take different tablets, including ones that don't make him feel better. They're just there to try and make him live longer. And there's a really big question about what does he actually want? What if he could, because his family's never spoken about it. And they're like lots of people. They look at me and they say, you know, well, you don't talk about these things, do you? And you don't. And they're poor people. They're thinking, well, what is right? And they also, there's this secret feeling that they don't think they should say anything because the doctor might think they don't love their dad.
Yes.
Oh, my Lord, they love him to pieces. They want what's right for him. And we need to be able to listen to them, let them speak.
Yeah, it's messy, you know, and I think that's, old age is messy. Life is messy.
And that's a good message as well. Wait, to be honest, it sounds as though the book's terribly gloomy. It's not. It does talk lots about the joy that we can have in life and what makes things fun. And, you know, the fact that a little of what you fancy does you good as you get older. And, you know, something about throwing caution to the wind some of the time. You know, what do you do about somebody who is, as they always say, fiercely independent? All, you know, the smaller the old lady is, the more likely she's going to be described as fiercely independent.
Yeah.
You know, and when do you intervene and when do you stand back and say, actually, do you know what you're doing is completely nuts, but I love you for it, and I love the fact that you're going to go on climbing the stairs when really you should have a stair lift, or that you're going to go and walk by the river when we're all worried that you might tumble in one day. You know, people do have to be allowed to make their own unwise decisions, so we talk about that as well.
And I can, you know, hear in every page in the book that you're an advocate for older people, and you're an antenna up when it comes to ageism, which there's a lot of, and you say that we need to put moral pressure on people to take care for their older relatives the same way as they take care for the youngest of their relatives.
Well, I think what can happen is there's a danger that you get a kind of competition, that there's a view that you give to older people and that means you might be taking away resources from younger people. And what the real message is that we're all in this together, and actually all the things that are good for older people are good for young people too. So, you know, decent housing that's warm and the bills aren't too big, that's fantastic for a young family on a limited income. public transport that works and that you can get on and off and it's reliable and it turns up and it's not too expensive. And you can get on it if you're using a walking stick or if you've got a buggy with a child and a baby. You know, that's really good. Having safe open spaces to be in, to you know, parks that you can walk in, fantastic for older people and fantastic for younger people. So really this is about sharing things in our society and also recognising that if you lock people away, older people aren't different. They are just the rest of us grown up.
Okay. There's a big philosophical chat, isn't there, about medicine? Because and how you're trained and how your colleagues are trained. And it is to keep us alive. Keep us alive at all costs. And that's your training, isn't it?
It is.
When I say you, I mean the medical profession, need to learn differently and think differently.
So what we need to do is listen to our patients, and this is why we need these conversations. What do people actually want? There is no, in the UK, no legal requirement. You start from a presumption of prolongation of life, but there isn't a legal requirement to do that, regardless of the consequences for the patient, if you know what those are or you can find them out. And all over the country, all the time, there are older people, and people of any age, saying, you know, I'm not going to have that. I'd rather not do that particular treatment. And this is all about sharing those decisions. So instead of the doctor being God, which is what used to happen 40 odd years ago, thank goodness we've moved on to this shared decision making, where we should be, and you have to have time and you have to have good communication skills, because some of these things are really complicated. I mean, we don't know what's right as doctors some of the time. Sharing that uncertainty is a really important thing to do without undermining somebody's confidence. So it's sitting down together, giving yourselves time, allowing those big subjects to come up, and then making plans. And, you know, it's moving, Ray, definitely.
Okay.
And there are so many people that are involved in this now, and they've really got the right idea.
Okay. Just before we let you go then, this final question, because people, and I would be one, I'd say, I don't know if I want to live to 100. And whenever I say that, people come back at me via text or if I'm in a conversation and they say, I'll come back to you when you're 99.
Exactly. And you've hit on a really important thing here. Younger people judge the quality of life of older people wrong.
Okay.
We look at older people and we think, oh, I wouldn't want to live like that. If you ask the older people themselves, they will often judge their quality of life much higher. And we all change through life. You know, I like watching, you know, the pottery throwdown and antiques roadshow. You know, that wasn't my choice of programme, or wouldn't have been, you know, 20, 30 years ago. We all change and our expectations change, and things that make us happy when we're 20 are different. Well, some of them are different, some of them are the same. You know, there are shared pleasures in every generation as well.
And we know all the statistics about we're an aging population. There's going to be a lot more of us older, so we're going to be having these chats over and over again. Anyway, your book is a very good starting point. The book about getting older for people who don't want to talk about it, Dr. Lucy Pollock, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Steve from Ballyshannon has been on. You can't help growing older, but you can help growing up. Or you don't have to grow up, says Steve. My beautiful mother-in-law, Lord rest her, had a very bad fall in her early 80s. She was badly hurt, but what she said hurt her the most was when people who were helping her kept referring to her as the old woman, says Catherine. And a fantastic book by Atul Gawande, Being Mortal, Medicine and What Matters in the End, explores ageing, illness and death. Yeah, I've read it and I've recommended it over and over again over the years. And it's highly recommended, as is Lucy Pollock's book, The Book About Getting Older for People Who Don't Want to Talk About It. Nishtosh and Amda Priefskelta and Neokta Le Kartu Walish. Gramaga Kart, thank you very much. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Finula has been on. She says, heard you talking about Jim Steins and the organisation he set up in Australia. It was called Reach. Thank you very much. Do you know that Tony Griffin set up a similar organisation in Dublin called the SOAR Foundation? I did know that. Which is doing amazing work with Irish teenagers in schools and online. It would be worth your while to talk to them and see what help is out there. Tony has also just written a brilliant handbook to encouraging resilience in teenagers. It's a must read for all parents. I think we've spoken to Tony on the show before. We must maybe, it's time to have another chat with him. The banana texter says, meant to say sodium in salt bonding with potassium in the bananas. Thanks for that. It's like been back in science class. And the Leave Insert is a wonderful all-round examination. We also have the Leave Insert Applied, which is also an excellent course. And we also have what is often referred to as FETAC, where learners of all ability can focus on the subjects they are interested in. The main problem is that a large number of people are stuck in their minds in the image of long ago, when there was only one way of getting a certification when they left school, and that was the Leave Insert, regardless of your interests or ability. By the way, if you take a bite of an apple and drink milk, it tastes like a banana. So you can try that at home now if you're bored, look for something to do. A bite of an apple and drink of milk, it tastes like a banana. And then if you put salt on it, it tastes creamier. So, and then put some beans on your Weetabix and some sugar on your cucumber, and you're set up for an evening. Kevin, there's too many spellings of the word snow here. I'll have a go at it anyway. Kevin in Westport. The modern English word snow comes from the old English snaw. Which not only meant snow, but was also used for snowfall and snowstorm. The Old English snaw evolved from the Proto-Germanic snavas, which came from the Proto-Indo-European root schnucht, says Kevin, which sounds like schnockte. So it brings us back home, the schnockte, nicely segued into this, because we have pictures. Yes, we have pictures and we have evidence of snow in Tipperary. From Kay Fanning. Loads of snow here, making snowmen with my daughter, Katie. There's snow people. There's snow people, Kay. Snow people. And that's great. They're about 3 foot tall, those snow people. And snow dogs. I've never seen a snow dog before. This is a photo of snow dogs built by our grandchildren, Clara and Rory, and their mum, Karen, and dad, Garvin. Shout out to my wife, Aileen, who is a dog groomer at Aileen's Professional Dog Grooming, Buncrana, County Donegal. And that's Frank. Thanks for that, Frank. They're pretty impressive snow dogs you have there. So well done to Clara and Rory and Karen and Garvin. If you get that out of the way, I can press that button. Yes. It's time for our quiz of today. Today is the 11th of February, and today's prize comes from the award-winning holistic Chaud Spa in Dunboyne Castle Hotel. We have a day for you and a friend. When I say you and a friend, I mean one of the people we're going to talk to in a couple of seconds' time. All the things you'd expect from a day retreat in a spa, and you can find out more at dunboynecastlehotel.com. Connor Dineen, how are you doing, Connor?
Hi, Ray. How's it going?
Not too bad. You're heading home for Skerries.
Yeah, I'm just on the outskirts of Skerries, Ray. While you're talking about snow people, I'd ask you a question. What's the difference between snowmen and snowwomen?
You'll have to stop there.
Snowballs, Ray. Yeah. Snowballs.
I tried. I dived in there to try and cut across you. To try and intercept that. But it was too late. I did my damnedest. I just want to let everybody know that I did my damnedest. I'll have to stop you there, I said. And then he just went on.
It's a bad line, yeah.
I'm presuming you're a dad, because that is a dad joke.
Oh, that is very much a dad joke.
It is, yes. A dad
joke. I can feel my kids cringing.
Yeah, yeah. And not just them. Not just them, Connor.
Oh, no.
You could change the D in dad for a B as well. Anyway. So who's at home? Who's cringing?
Christine, my wife, her cringing wife, and Katie and Oshin as well.
And Katie's in secondary school, so she's going to be scarlet for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're on the road for a living, are you, Connor?
No, I'm based in city centre, Dublin, so just driving home from work.
Okay, right. Yep. And there's no sign of snow out north Dublin, no?
No, not at the minute, but I've seen photographs from my family down in Limerick, and winter is coming, John Snow. It's here.
Yeah, it's here. It's on the way up the country, yeah. And you know what happens on the quiz, and you've been very good at answering questions from a distance.
Yes, we'll give it a go now.
Yes,
you know?
Okay.
None of this armchair stuff.
Right. You're up against Sinead Murray in Cluny. How are you doing, Sinead?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm great. Yeah, not a bother, thanks.
So you're a Meath woman living in Dublin?
That's right, yeah.
Cluny is near enough to Meath, isn't it?
Yeah, just on the border.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Across the border.
You didn't go far?
No, I didn't go far, no, definitely right.
And what brought you from Meath to Dublin?
Oh, I married a Dub, so.
Right, okay. And you're still with him?
I'm still, yeah. Just about.
That's right. I don't want to know any more. It's like I'm going to intercept that conversation as well. No, and you have two sons, Charlie and William. What ages are they?
Charlie is 13 and William is 7.
So a first year and a first class, is it?
First class, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And how's the homeschooling going?
Well, Charlie's fine. Charlie will go on up and do his work, but it's somewhere better.
Say again?
I'm struggling with the 7-year-old.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think everyone appreciates that at that age it's difficult. It's just...
No, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Just to keep their attention in front of it. And are they getting interactive stuff or is it video stuff?
Yeah. No, they're getting, a bit of everything. They're definitely getting a bit of everything. And then we picked up books last week, which was really good because, you know, they can work better with their books.
Yes, yeah.
And
yeah.
You can just take a picture of it and send it in. But, it's hard enough going now. I didn't think it was going to be as tough.
Yeah, no, it is tough. And then there's muting when there shouldn't be muting and all sorts of things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like what I find funny is it's, you know, when you're in school, you're given out for talking. And then when you're on a Zoom call, you're given out for muting. Anyway, there you go. That's the world we live in. So you're a hairdresser and no sign of hair salons opening up for quite some time.
No, it's not looking good at all. No, I don't think we'll be back for a while.
Yeah, I was listening to Micheál Martin this morning and he's talking early summer for things, isn't he?
Yeah, it's really hard going.
Yeah, and I see Boris Johnson said on the cover of one of the English papers today that people shouldn't be planning international holidays and maybe not even holidays within the UK. So that's, you know...
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah, there you go. So anyway, so you do the husband's hair and you do the two lads' hair, so that keeps you sort of tipping over,
yeah,
does it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And you have something in common with my wife, my lady wife.
Oh.
You've started knitting.
I have, yeah. I've a sister-in-law and she started knitting and she said to me she was really enjoying it and I thought, oh, I'd never get used to it. And so I went off and I bought needles, huge needles and wool, and I had a go and I'm loving it. So
yeah. What are you knitting? Needed.
Oh, I can only knit scarves.
Oh, yeah, but that...
Very holy scarves.
Yeah, well, there's something zen-like about it, isn't it? It's the rhythmic thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah. So quickly. Yeah. You know, shut off your phone and... Yeah. Away from the fridge.
All of the bad stuff. Right, okay. So it's Conor against Sinead. Good luck to you both. 5 questions each. And I need the answers as quick as possible. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If we have a draw, we go to a tie break situation. Okay. Sinead, say good luck to Conor.
Good luck, Conor.
Best luck, Sinead.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
Right, Conor, first question for you. This day, 660 BC, is the traditional date for the foundation of Japan. What we want to know is the capital city of Japan.
Tokyo.
Correct answer. Sinead, on this day in 2011, the Egyptian revolution culminated in the resignation of Hosni Mubarak and the transfer of power to the Supreme Military Council. What's the capital of Egypt?
Cairo.
Correct answer. Connor, second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
Same way I found out your name. I thought M was a randomly assigned letter. I had no idea it stood for...
Utter one more syllable and I'll have you killed.
Well, I understand 00s have a very short life expectancy. So your mistake will be short-lived.
On this day in 2007, at the 60th BAFTAs, that film you heard a clip from, Casino Royale, the 21st James Bond movie, was nominated for Best Film. Who played James Bond in that?
Daniel Craig.
Is the correct answer. Sinead, have a listen to this.
I'd like to know why... None of the guys never told me that you, Miss Ratchet, and the doctors could keep me here till you're good and ready to turn me loose. That's what I'd like to know.
Still with the 2007 60th BAFTAs, that actor was nominated for a Best Supporting Actor Award for his role in The Departed. You heard him there in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Can you name him?
Jack Nicholson.
Correct answer. Right. Connor, your third question. On this day in 1908, Australia regained the Ashes with a 308-run cricket victory over England. How many stars are on the Australian flag? Is it five or six?
Five.
It's six. Six is the answer we're looking for. Okay, it was a guess. Similar question for you, Sinead. On this day in 1973, the first one-day cricket international between Pakistan and New Zealand took place. How many stars are there on the New Zealand flag? Four or five?
Five.
It's four. Both of you went for five. Both of you were wrong. Okay, two all then. We come on to question four. Connor, it's an audio one. Have a listen. On this day in 1983, that single, Total Eclipse of the Heart, was released. Can you name the singer?
Bonnie Tyler.
Is the correct answer. Are these too easy for you, Connor?
Oh.
Sinead, your audio question. Have a listen. All I want to do is have some fun. I got a feeling I'm not the only one. All I want to do is have some fun. On this day in 1962, that American singer-songwriter was born in Kennett in Missouri. Can you name her?
Is it Sheryl Crow?
It is Sheryl Crow. Right. So it's three all, down to the wire. Connor, if you get this right, you put Sinead under pressure. Good luck with this, your final question. On this day in 2012, Whitney Houston, American singer and actress, died tragically. We want to know is what year she was born in. 1960, 1963 or 1966? It's 1960.
Okay.
Is right. Oh, was it? Okay. Well, it says on the thing it was 19. So are you sure now? Hold on. I'll just get this right now because it says on the paper 1960, but I've been told it's 1963. Okay. So you are correct.
Whoa.
I was thinking she wasn't that old. I thought she was more my age.
Yes.
So there you go. You are correct. 1963. Well done on that. Okay, four, Connor. Sinead, you're on three. Would you have a question in hand? Good luck with this. If you get it right, brings it to a tie-break situation. On this day, Jennifer Aniston, American actress, famous for her role as Rachel in Friends, was born in California. What year was she born? 1966, 1969 or 1972?
1972.
It was 1969.
Oh.
Yeah, she's 52 today. 52 today, and we say happy birthday to Jennifer Aniston because she always listens into the show. Sinead, we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
Okay, thank you so much.
And you're a great phone. Thank you very much for taking the time out to call us. Okay, see you, Sinead.
Mind yourself and family.
See you. Bye, bye. Connor, yourself and the person of your choice are off to the Shoda or even the Shode Spa in Dunboyne Castle Hotel when we're the other side of all this. And you can find out more if you go to the website dunboynecastlehotel.com.
That's brilliant, right? Thank you very much.
Well done, Connor. Good luck facing the family now after that. Go on.
Never live it down.
Good luck. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Ray, snow people must wear masks, must be 2 metres apart, not more than 6 in any garden pod, and cannot be built by more than 2 families for the same bubble. John McGovern in Dundrum. Very good, John. Now, did you know it's the Chinese New Year tomorrow? And we're going to be talking to the Mayor of Dublin, Hazel Chu, in a moment. But first, we're going to play this in its entirety, just to lift your spirits. There you go. Jerusalem. The song that everybody's danced to. A bit late sending this text, was driving. I just want to say, go Gardaí on the Jerusalem challenge. The kitchen sink has been thrown at them at this stage to deal with. So any reprieve all round. I know no Gardaí personally, says Bernadette. Now, are we okay or no? We're getting more texts there. We're waiting to get in touch with the Mayor of Dublin, Hazel Chu. We just arrived in the Cameroon. Tonight, the sanctuary runners virtually will rest in Abuja, Nigeria, then 10,000 kilometres left to Tripoli. People can still join. Visit sanctuaryrunners.ie to find out more. You can donate your virtual kilometres to the virtual run. I think it's a virtual run, isn't it? From one tip of Africa to the top of Africa. Now, tomorrow, about 1/6 of the world's population will be celebrating the Chinese New Year. And one of them is the Mayor of Dublin, Hazel Chu, and she's on the line now. How are you doing, Hazel?
How's it going, Ray? How are you?
Good, I'm good. Happy New Year. How do you
Happy New Year.
How do you say it in Chinese?
Gong Hei Fa Choi is what you say in Cantonese. Gong Xi Fa Choi is Mandarin. I only speak Cantonese, so I had to learn that one.
Right. Gong Hei Fa Choi.
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay, right. And is that Happy New Year or is it something else?
It's Happy New Year. Well, it's kind of a good wishes to you. So
okay, right. Now it's different. Everything is different this year. First of all, congratulations. I haven't spoken to you really on the radio since you were appointed the Lord Mayor of Dublin. How are things in the Mansion House for you?
It's been okay, and I have to say thank you to you for coming in to do the Christmas recordings. That really cheered a lot of people up. So even though I didn't really get to talk to you either, so I don't think anyone's been able to talk to anyone. It's been surreal in here, but it's been an honour and a privilege. But I'm very, very conscious of the difficulties that everyone is facing and the challenges. So we've been trying to change the role up to make sure we connect more in with people. So starting from actually in 2 weeks, we're going to be doing a weekly live lunchtime session for outreach so that people know what's going on here and know what's going on in the council.
Oh, great. Yeah. You seemed, when I was there before Christmas, you seemed very relaxed. Were you in your slippers or a pair of Uggs or what were you wearing? A pair of runners?
Damn it, I should have worn shoes. I was chasing around waiting for the little one to come home. So I was in a pair of runners and funny enough, I always wear runners. Since I've taken the role, I didn't quite change out of my runners, shall we say.
Yes.
I think that's the thing. The role is an important role. An important office, but I think the person who's in it also has to be comfortable and make themselves fit in the role.
So. Yeah, you have to be yourself. That's hugely important. Yeah. I've spoken to you before about your heritage. So your parents came from Hong Kong to Ireland when?
70s. I was just thinking that today. I was talking to my mom, actually. She was reckoning around late 70s or so. So she would have been a teenager, 18 at that stage, coming over here and not knowing anyone and starting a new life. It was a recession over in Hong Kong at the time. So she came over to find a job and find a new home.
Right.
And so did my dad separately, actually.
Oh, and they met here?
They met in the kitchen of a restaurant. She was a dishwasher and my dad was a kitchen porter.
Ah, I didn't know that side of the story. And then they went on and opened their own restaurant eventually.
They opened a chip van. As I keep laughing, saying it's very Roddy Doyle, ma'am. And she goes, who? And I then have to tell her who Roddy Doyle is. So, but I actually went back to the school recently that I went to a primary school in Firhouse and the chip van would have parked across the road. But now there's a wall there where the bit used to be at. And I felt a little sad actually looking at it. But yeah, they went, saved up, worked in takeaways and restaurants and then saved up enough to buy their own chip van and then afterwards their own takeaway. So, restaurant.
Okay. What's your first memory of the Chinese New Year celebrations?
So Chinese, well, we call it Lunar New Year because it's celebrated by so many Asian countries, like it's celebrated by Hong Kong, by the Singapore, by Taiwan, Vietnam. So loads of people now, China, of course, as well. So, and my first memory was going to Hong Kong to visit my granny because we would have taken turns, cousins and uncles and aunts will have taken turns to go back to Hong Kong to visit her because no matter what we tried to do, she wouldn't come over here to live here with us. And I can't blame her. She doesn't speak any English. Hong Kong was her home. All her friends were there. So we took turns going back. And one year I managed to go get lucky and land on Chinese New Year. And I've never experienced it before, Hong Kong and Chinese New Year. And it was this wonderful spectacle. Straight away landing there, everyone was saying Happy New Year to me, even when I didn't know them. Yes. And then when we got back to the village, as I call it, the village of toys, which is because all the toys used to live there. So people that I've never met before came up and started giving me little red envelopes of money. And I was there going, oh, this is great crack. So, like, as a child, you'd be there going, oh, my God, it's Christmas. So, yeah. And I guess that's the thing for a lot of Asian communities. The Lunar New Year would be their Christmas. The Spring Festival would be their Christmas.
And that's the tradition. Lei Si, is it the red envelope with money?
Yeah,
in it?
The Lei Si. So Lei Si. If you are married, you have to give the Lei Si to children. Or in my case, up to, I don't know, even a few years ago, I was getting Lei Si. If you are unmarried, you receive it. So if you are married, you give it to everyone.
Okay. Now, food is a huge thing. And four courses is seen as unlucky, is it?
It is. There's the word four, when said in Chinese, is say. So when you say, it, like some people, if they say it slightly wrong, it could mean die as well. Okay. So sometimes it's mixed up with the word sick, which is eat as well. So you would actually, the first time my other half met my mother for dinner, at the end of the dinner, you're supposed to say, eat slowly, which is man, man, sick. Instead, he managed to say, man, man, say, which is die slowly. So that went down really well with my mother, as you can imagine. So to this day, she mocks him over it.
Yeah. And so it can't be four and it can't be an uneven number. So you could have seven. Could you have seven courses, 13 courses?
No. It can be four and you can have, well, it should be an even number. So you should have eight courses.
Oh, it can never be. Yeah. It can't be uneven. Sorry, it can't be uneven.
There's a couple of traditions in Chinese, especially when it comes to New Year. You're not supposed to cut your hair on the day. You're supposed to wear red. You're not supposed to clean on the day because that cleans all the prosperity out. You're not supposed to have dishes that are an even number at the table because, again, that's bad luck. There's a lot of luck and superstition to do with it. But a lot of it is less superstition, but more culture. I think a lot of people kind of pass on these traditions and yes. say, okay, you shouldn't be doing this, or you shouldn't be doing it. You should definitely be doing that on the day. There's a tradition that you're supposed to be washing all the bad luck the night before with some pomelo leaves as well. There's all sorts of things that you hear from different grannies and people.
I better tell them there's loads of virtual events going on. DublinLunarNewYear.ie, DublinLunarNewYear.ie, and just you have about 10 seconds to tell me of your plans for this evening and tomorrow. What's the plan?
I'm actually working until 8 o'clock tomorrow evening from 8 in the morning. Tonight I'm hoping to get a call in with my mum who's been cocooning. So my plan. Normally we would be all gathering, but Happy New Year to everyone out there. And I know it's really tough, but it will be better next year.
It will. Gong Hei Fat Choi.
Gong Hei Fat Choi. Where's my lycee?
Thank you. It's in the post. Good luck. See you. That's Mary Dublin, Hazel Chu. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Yes. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.